In May 2017, Mayor Mitch Landrieu addressed the people of New Orleans about his decision to take down four Confederate monuments in the city. His speech, which has been heard by millions, sparked a national conversation about the history of our nation and how best to confront our heritage. Now in paperback, the book In the Shadow of Statues, A White Southerner Confronts History, Mayor Landrieu discusses the path he took to remove the Confederate monuments and traces his personal relationship to this history, tackling the broader history of slavery, race, and institutional inequality in the United States of America. It is a great pleasure to welcome Mayor Mitch Landrieu to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's really nice to have you on the program. I've just let me, before we dive in, if I don't ask you at some point if you're running for president, would you, when you hang up, be disappointed?
No, not at all.
Okay. All right.
And the answer is no, not at this time.
Just curious. Just
thanks
curious.
For not asking.
Yeah, I didn't want to ask. I just wanted to know,
yeah,
like,
no,
if you get off going, hey,
he
never asked me. What the hell's with that? He should have asked me. No. What kind of journalist is he? Well, so the book, you know, we had you on, I think, for the hardcover, and it's great to have you to have you back. What do you think has happened over the last year in this conversation? That word is used very much in the subject of a conversation. What do you think has gone on in this conversation about the issues you raise in the book over the past year since the hardcover originally came out?
Well, two answers. One, writ large, the issue of race continues to plague our country. A lot of discussion about it. We're not particularly good at talking to each other, but the conversation is in the forefront of everybody's mind. And secondly, about the monuments, lots of people have been talking about it and thinking about what the presence of those things mean in their cities. So, you know, we evolve through this. We learn over time. We listen. We talk to each other. And now conversations are going on all over the country about this particular issue. But it's not just about statues. It's about the ideas and the attitudes that allow the statues to be there in the first place. So institutional issues like the way the economy is structured, the way the criminal justice system is restructured, transportation systems, housing systems, education systems, all of those things are important components. And then, of course, the issue of white nationalism and white supremacy are really at the forefront right now, which have to be shouted down, called out for what they are, and really put aside in the country. All of those things are percolating, and hopefully we'll work our way through it in a constructive way.
When it comes to the decision that you made, what kind of calls were you getting from other mayors, from other leaders who said, okay, Mr. Mayor, what should I do?
Well, you know, that didn't happen for a while. It took us about 2 years to work through our process, and I think people, you know, watched it. I write in the book about having really studied this for a period of time before I said publicly what I wanted to do. And the day that the thing that made me kind of say today's the day to do it was the killings at AME in Charleston when Dylann Roof slaughtered 9 people who were praying.
Right.
And then Governor Haley, who was a Republican, and Mayor Riley took down the Confederate flag. And of course, it's hardly arguable that the Confederate flag is different than a monument. They're one and the same. And I made a judgment that day that, you know, it was now time to move to the next step. After we did that, you know, the issue took on some national prominence. And, you know, I really never guessed that it would, and I wasn't thinking much about it. But evidently, it was something a lot of people had been thinking about. So mayors started calling and asking, well, how did you do it? What did you do? And then many of them took, you know, their own pathways to it. I would really encourage mayors to have public conversations about the issue of race in their communities. You can't hardly hide from it. You can't go under it or around it. You actually have to go through it, and you have to get good at it, which means you have to practice because we're all pretty clumsy at it. And the monuments are just one small piece of that much larger conversation.
The thing that I've always loved about this book and about your work is that, I mean, you say this straight up in the title, A White Southerner Confronts History. I mean, that is part of the equation. It's a huge part of the equation that you're white and you're talking about this subject. So there does seem to be I assume you sort of walk just into a hornet's nest with that alone.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, because the title was purposeful. First of all, I think it is really important that the South stand up and speak to this issue, because we have a special history. The city of New Orleans sold more people into slavery than any other city. Richmond, I was there yesterday, was the second. It seems to me that if this is where the offense occurred, that we have a special obligation to confront it. That's first. And secondly, it's important for a white person from the South to actually say, well, I was there, I understood historically because I lived with the vestiges of it over time. I now have come to an awareness of it, and I want to speak about it from a perspective of a white person from the South. And one of the other reasons is, too, quite frankly, in defense of the South, that a lot of people in the North think everybody in the South can't read or write, and we don't have shoes, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not true. The South is a wonderful place. We have great natural resources. We all have a lot of intellectual capital. We have good people. We are people that believe in faith, family, and country. We like community. And on all sides of the aisle, we love our place. But it is also true that we have part of our history that we've never dealt with. And by the way, the country has the same problem. You know, it's not just in the South.
Right.
I don't think anybody would argue that racism just existed in the South and doesn't exist anywhere else. And so we can be an example to the rest of the country about how we continue to transform, become that more perfect union that we talk about, aspire to be a place where everybody is treated as equals. And that's why I thought that is actually why we named the book that way, because I wanted it to be provocative. And it certainly was, in a good way and in a bad way.
Right. You know, I'm curious as to I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm just curious as to how do you think the city of New Orleans is different now without those statues present?
Well, again, if you just take the statues down and you don't change anything else, you hadn't done anything.
Right.
When we started rebuilding the city after Katrina, we made a purposeful and intentional decision not to put the city back the way it was the night before Katrina hit. And in order to make that one decision, we had to confront the truth that we were a descending city, that we were shrinking, that we had made mistakes in the past that created bad education systems, bad health care systems, et cetera. And we decided after Katrina not to build it back the way it was, but to build it the way that it should have been if we would have gotten it right the first time, which of course forced us to go back and look in the mirror and confront our deficiencies. So the city today, because we did that, and the monuments are just a small part of it. Remember, we rebuilt our libraries, we rebuilt our hospitals, we rebuilt our roads and bridges. We basically reconstructed the city while simultaneously, when we were preparing for the 21st century, while simultaneously hanging on to the authentic history of New Orleans. The monuments were a false part of our history. They were a narrow part of our history. They were only about 4 years of our history and didn't tell the whole truth. So the city is a far better place spiritually, structurally, and functionally than it was before Katrina hit.
And the conversations that were started then have to keep going on. And in your mind, they continue to go on because we're constantly reminded.
You know, ideas, truth floats across time.
Right.
It floats across time and space. And this is a truism. I mean, something that somebody said 100 years ago can reverberate today if it comes into your consciousness, either through writing or through some kind of media. Ideas that lay dormant for a while get resurrected over time. Essentially, the truth will win out. And it just takes time. I mean, that's the way history develops itself. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with going back and say we gotten it wrong. Now we want to get it right and changing things.
Okay, so about truth. It seems difficult to have a conversation about truth without talking about the President of the United States. And the most recent example is after the horror that took place in New Zealand, that the President plays down the threat of white nationalism and believes that it is that it is not a growing threat. So how do we go from that, his truth, to what you see, and I think many of us see as the truth, of that it's a very real issue, not only in our country, but throughout the world?
Well, I don't have enough time or patience or willingness to try to dissect the president's psychosis and why he says what he says and what he does. I can observe, though, as an observer without being judgmental, that the president goes out of his way to opine about everything and everybody, and he doesn't hesitate to criticize people for the smallest things. But he omits to criticize everybody and anybody that has anything to do with white nationalism or white supremacy. I don't know what his motive is. I just observe that that's what he does. And I can just clearly state that he is wrong in doing that, that words matter, and words of the president matter the most because he, whoever's sitting in that office, is the most powerful person in the world, and people hear what he says and what he does not say, so that matters. Now, having said that, we don't have to wait around for the president to get right about anything in order for us to be right, and there are facts. Now, the president talks a lot about securing the nation, which is why he lambasts immigrants all the time, because he wants everybody to think that immigrants are criminals. Right, or Muslims, or terrorists, or Mexicans, or rapists. This is part of the language of demeaning people based on groups that they belong to, or gods that they praise, and not on individual actions. But what he refuses to do for some strange reason is look at the number of deaths that have occurred on our soil, in our churches, in our synagogues, that are perpetuated by mostly white men who profess to be Christian. Now, I'm a Christian. You know, and I don't think that this is an anti-Christian thing, but for some reason he won't recognize that these men are troubled, and what ties them together is this notion that somehow white people are superior to everybody else, and that's just not true, and that's not what we believe as a country. What we believe is that we're a multicultural, pluralistic society where everybody comes to the table of democracy as equals, and that we don't judge people based on race or creed or color or sexual orientation or nation of origin, that we judge people by their individual actions. That is an important thing to say over and over. That's not a conservative thing or a liberal thing or a progressive thing. That's like an American thing. It is, right. It is the American motto, out of many we are one. That's who we are. And if you don't believe in that, you don't believe in something that is a bedrock of American democracy. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It doesn't whether President Trump believes it or not, he can believe what he wants to believe. But if he believes there's not white supremacy or white nationalism, he's wrong about that.
So
it exists. It's provable. And we've seen evidence of it. And it's not just in America. It's in New Zealand. It's in Germany. It's all over the world right now. And it's not just an American movement. And this is what is dangerous about it, which we have to pay attention to, because that idea has led to the greatest atrocities in the history of mankind. And you cannot let it rear its ugly head, not on American soil or anywhere else.
We always want to blame someone, and I heard even, you know, within hours after the attack in New Zealand that people were putting this in the footsteps of the president, saying, you know, it's because of his rhetoric and because he's fanning the flames. But I have problems with that, just because it seems like there's so much more going on. But let me just ask you this, because you saw this, you write about this in the book, that you saw events that took place in New Orleans and the protests, alt-right protests that were taking place in your city, that foreshadowed events that happened in Charlottesville and ultimately caught the attention of the FBI. So there is a domino effect here.
Well, let me be clear about this. The president is not the one in New Zealand who picked up a gun and killed those people.
Correct.
It was that sick individual who did that. He did it because he believed that Muslims were evil because of their religion, and he killed them, and he thought that whites were supreme to them. That idea is wrong. The president did not do that, and so it's not fair to say that he is directly responsible for that. However, it is very important that national leaders and not just political leaders, but clergy and business leaders and radio hosts, speak out against the idea. You have to speak out against it to condemn it, white nationalism and white supremacy. And when you don't speak out against it, when you omit it, when you wink and nod to it, you can create an environment where people who are deranged, that are not thinking the right way, take matters into their own hands, because it is in fact dangerous and does lead to death. And that is in fact what has happened in America, not only during the presidency of Donald Trump, but it's been happening since the beginning of time. There is a lot of evidence that when we all come together across lines and we call it out and we tamp it down, that it makes us more peaceful and more safe. But if you give it license, if you wink and nod to it, if you give it breath, and people like that think they have power, they will act on it. And we should not do that. We all have an obligation to be affirmative in this regard, and not just passive and omit, you know, the danger that it poses to us.
So in our final moments, how were you able to tamp down? How were you able to put in its place the protests, the alt-right protests that took place in your city as you were removing the Confederate monuments?
Well, first of all, it's a great question, and I want to thank my police chief, Mike Harrison, who's now in Baltimore, and the members of the police department and the community and the protesters, by the way. We had conversations with them. We said, listen, we respect your right to protest on the streets of New Orleans. But your right, your First Amendment right, ends when you try to strike out and hit somebody else. So we are going to protect, we're going to give you the right to protest, but we're also going to protect you, and we're going to protect the other folks. And it took a lot of preparation. It took a lot of defensive work and offensive work. We were very thoughtful about when and how the protest occurred, where the protesters stood, whether they were separated by barricades. It was a really beautiful example of how the government, through its police department, really respected people's First Amendment rights and protected them as well. And it required a lot of work. It cost a lot of money. But you know what? It was done peacefully. It was a very aggressive debate, but it was handled through the democratic process. And, you know, through God's grace, we got it right. Unfortunately, in Charlottesville, the response was a little bit different. But I would just caution people as they go through this to be very, very thoughtful about the security risks and take the proper precautions, and ask the people that are participating in these demonstrations to demonstrate aggressively, but to demonstrate peacefully.
You know, I listen to you talk and I read your book and I think, wow, I understand why people want you to run for president. Okay.
Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you so much.
Mitch Landrieu is the former mayor of the city of New Orleans. He is the author of the new book, In the Shadow of Statues, A White Southerner Confronts History. It's just out in paperback. Mr. Mayor, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.